Welcome to the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network.
And welcome to the Jeffers Brief. I am John Jeffers, your host, founder, and executive producer here at the Contra Radio Network and the Jeffers Brief. And tonight, you know, there was a point, and I announced it last week, that I was going to do a topical format change. This week I've decided that it would, before I go on, and the thing was this, it's going to try to make it, the Jeffers Brief, a bit more quote unquote inclusive by expanding the topic format to see if there was a way between those of the left-leaning political persuasion and the right-leaning political persuasion could find common ground. And I really thought, yeah, I could probably do this. We could probably find some common ground between the two. But this week, some of the things that I've come across have made me realize that was naive. And I cannot do it. Not that I don't want to do it. I can't do it. And what did it for me was the fact that, you know, the Christmas song, Baby It's Cold Outside, has been banned by some radio stations because it's too, quote, rapey, unquote. You know? So I'm thinking to myself, how is this even considered such? Followed by the fact that there are some on the left, especially those in the supposedly higher education realms, have decided that VeggieTales is racist. VeggieTales. VeggieTales. Yes, I'm talking about the kids program from the 90s that dealt with, they told stories from the Bible, and they put it into, you know, context of today with various fruits and vegetables playing the part. And I'm thinking to myself, how? My daughter loved VeggieTales. You know what? I found them to be fun as well. And it was something I could watch with my daughter at the, you know, when she was very young. But then I read these stories, I'm thinking, how? How do you try to find common ground with people like this? Where is their common ground? I said to myself, it can't be done. It's unfortunate, but it just can't be done. But this is what's going to do. I will be doing a topical format change, mainly because I'm going to let Mark Boyle of the Mark Boyle Show, I don't know if you're aware of it, but he's like the prepper guy. He's going to do the prepping and things of that nature. I, on the other hand, am going to discuss some of the stories I've seen that I wanted to comment on. Yeah, we'll do it that way. And like I said, there's enough, shall we say, media outlets, whether it's television, radio, podcasting, blogs, vlogs, the video, of right versus left. And the same is true on the other side, left versus right. And it's a very crowded area. But I will be commenting on some of these stories. And one of the things I want to do is, true story, I was at my bank today, and I was talking to the branch manager. And we got to talking, and you know what? I'm just going to say, her name is Michelle. I'm not going to tell you what bank I'm at. I don't want her to lose her job. But it turns out, she is a dined to be a prepper. Didn't know where to actually go with it, where to start. She had some ideas, and her political outlook is similar to mine, and probably similar to the many listeners here on the Jeffers Brief. Ended up talking with her for about a good 45 minutes. And she says, you know, I don't know where to look for these, you know, this information. She said, how do you find it? And I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. Tonight, I'm going to do a show tonight. And this is for you, Michelle. Here is a list of conservative thought and conservative ideas that I think will fill the bill for you. Excuse me. The list is kind of dated. It's from March. And it's the top 10 conservative magazines. The first one we have is the National Review Online. National Review and National Review Online, also known as NRO. They're widely read and influential publications for Republican conservative news, commentary, and opinion. Both the magazine and the website are the important resources for Republicans and conservatives who shape opinion on the important issues and reach affluent, educated, and highly responsive audiences. The magazine and website serve as excellent directories of information for conservatives wishing to get involved in the movement, whether they're corporate and government leaders, the financial elite, educators, journalists, community and association leaders, or engaged activists. Number two, remember I said this was dated, is the Weekly Standard. Now, the Weekly Standard made its debut on September 18, 1995. It's edited by Bill Kristol and Fred Barnes. The magazine is published 48 times a year by News America Incorporated. The Weekly Standard is a widely read conservative publication which offers intelligent writing, vociferous opinions, and insightful articles. The editors, columnists, and reporters for the magazine have their collective thumb firmly on the pulse of what's happening on Capitol Hill. The magazine's articles shape political opinions in Washington and have effectuated change more than once. Unfortunately, they've become too conformist, and I understand they're on the brink of bankruptcy. Enough said. Number three is the American Spectator. The American Spectator was founded in 1924. The magazine boasts that it is published remarkably without regard to sex, lifestyle, race, color, creed, physical handicap, or national origin. The online edition covers everything from politics to sports, all with a decidedly conscious bend toward traditional conservatism. Its pages are refreshing and features a blog with intriguing insight on the latest issues. Number four, The American Conservative. The American Conservative is the magazine for the disenfranchised conservative, the one who is uncomfortable with the rash of false conservatives who have come to dominate the movement. In other words, the words of the editor, we believe conservatism to be the most natural political tendency, rooted in man's taste for the familiar, for family, for faith in God. So much of what passes for contemporary conservatism is wedded to a kind of radicalism, fantasies of global hegemony. The hubristic notion of America as a universal nation for all the world's peoples, a hyper-global economy. The American Conservative offers a refreshing change from the usual ranting that has come to characterize so much of today's political discourse. Number five is The New American. The New American is a publication of the John Birch Society. Like its parent company, The New American is guided by its strong support of the Constitution. In the words of its editors, specifically, we want to restore and retain the values and visions that made America great. Limited government under the Constitution, the freedoms our Constitution guarantees, and the personal responsibility of a free people must exercise to stay free. In the area of foreign policy, our editorial point of view is based on avoiding foreign entanglements and going to war only when necessary to defend our country and citizens. Put simply, The New American offers excellent content for those looking for a decidedly paleo-conservative perspective. Number 6, The Front Page Magazine. Front Page Magazine is the online journal of news and political commentary for the Center for the Study of Popular Culture. The online publication has 1.5 million visitors, and 620,000 unique visitors a month, translate into a total of 65 million hits. In the words of its editors, the Center's purpose, and by extension, the magazine's, is to establish a conservative presence in Hollywood and show how popular culture had become a political battleground. For those looking at an alternative to Hollywood's liberalism, Front Page Magazine offers excellent content. Number 7, The Christian Science Monitor, founded in 1908 by Mary Baker Eddy. Or it could be Eddy. The Christian Science Monitor is an international daily newspaper published Monday through Friday. Despite its name, it is not a religious magazine. Everything in the Monitor is international and U.S. news and features, except for one religious article that has appeared each day in the home forum section since 1908 at the request of the paper's founder. The Monitor is a uniquely independent voice in journalism, and that it offers readers a public service-oriented perspective on national and world events. It's a great place to start when you're looking to research any issue of public or political importance. Number 8, The Cybercast News Service, also you might know it as CNS News. The Cybercast News Service was launched in 1998 by the Media Research Center. In the words of its editors, the service is a news source for individuals, news organizations, and broadcasters who put a higher premium on balance than spin and seek news that's ignored or underreported as a result of media bias by omission. This site is a great place to start if you're looking for nuggets of truth about topics you just know are being spun by the mainstream media, also known as the lapdogs of the Democratic Party. Number 9, Human Events. Human Events was President Ronald Reagan's favorite newspaper for a reason. Its editorial content is guided by the core conservative principles of free enterprise, limited government, and according to its editors, a staunch, unwavering defense of American freedom above all. Its editors go on to say, for over 60 years, Human Events has made it a policy to deliver to intelligent, independent-thinking newsreaders something entirely different, something you cannot get from conventional news sources. This is a great resource for political conservatives thirsty for the latest information. And number 10, The Washington Times. Washington Times Weekly is a weekly edition of the popular newspaper that combines a number of features from throughout the week, including top columns and stories. There you go. If you're a conservative and you're looking, and you know you're not going to get it on the boob tube, you know that. So, something to think about. There you go, Michelle. I also like the Gateway Pundit myself, personally. I like the Gateway Pundit. I find it to be literally on breaking news. It's pretty quick on there. So, and they take their information, it's kind of like an aggregate almost, I guess if you wanted to call it that, you could. So, anyways, just wanted to put that out there. And I'm sure you listeners here have your own favorites. Let's see, if you wanted to call in tonight, our number, well, by the time you guys get this, it'll be... this will be recorded, but if you wanted to call, it would be area code 605-475-4054, access code 982-642, and we have nobody. Now, something I wanted to put out there, for those of you that are on Podbean and other sources, these are the countries that Contra Radio Network episodes have been downloaded to. Obviously, the United States, Canada, Costa Rica, Colombia, Brazil, Chile, Iceland, Australia, New Zealand, Vietnam, South Africa, Nigeria, Spain, Germany, Netherlands, the United Kingdom, Ireland, Norway, Sweden, and even Russia. There you go. So I thought I would put that out there. I wanted to acknowledge those countries and their listeners that have downloaded it. There you go. And then for this period of the monitoring, which had been last month complete, which had been November, two states here in the United States that have never been in the top three, Virginia and Massachusetts. Massachusetts, can you believe that? Have been downloading our episodes. And speaking of Virginia, I want to say hello to one of our longtime listeners, Martha B. You know who you are. I just wanted to put it out there. Say hello, and thank you for being a good listener here. Something else I wanted to touch base on. You know, we've been seeing, I don't know if you've been paying attention really, generally the listeners of the Jeffers Brief are pretty well informed. They really are. But one of the things I noticed, if you know about the, you've been following the French gas tax protests going on, the yellow vest, I've got, aside from why they're doing it, I've got an observation I'd like to make. Did the French people not have an election? They had it, what, 3 years ago or so? When Macron defeated a conservative French woman, Marie Le Pen? My question to the French people is this. You voted for this man, Macron. You knew what he was about. Do you really have a right to protest knowing that what he was? He didn't hide it. You chose to vote in a socialist government, and that's what you got. You get what you vote for. Do they really have a legitimate complaint to be protesting? Just a question among friends. That's what I'm thinking. Now, the same goes for here in the United States. Look, I don't care what my president does. I don't care what president... No, I take that back. Let me rephrase that. I don't care what President Trump says. I care about what he does. And if he wants to get on Twitter, or Twitter, as the case may be, I don't care. Rant away. I don't care. I don't care what he says. I care about what he does. But that's me. And let me ask you something. If you voted for a Democrat, all right, and they did the midterm elections, and for some reason, somehow, some way, they managed to get, you know, to raise your federal taxes, which, by the way, they can't do, because whatever they do, they have to go through the Senate, and the Republicans increased their numbers in the Senate. Therefore, and no matter what legislation they propose, it has to go through the Senate. So, and my point is this, no matter what happens, the lapdogs of the mainstream media will go and blow it up and carry on that the Democrats are the best thing since sliced bread, this is what they got to do, and, you know, everything else, you know, Democrat good, Republican bad, liberal good, conservative bad, and this is what they, that's the way they look at it. So I'm thinking to myself, if the House of Representatives, the House of the People, does things that you don't like or you don't agree with, and you voted Democrat, you have no reason to complain. Just sit back, grab your ankles, and take it. Again, you get what you vote for. And that kind of dovetails into another thing, another aspect that needs to be discussed. How many people live in a red state? Have you noticed an influx of people from the blue states moving to the red states? And when you ask these people in the blue that this moved into the red states from the blue states, well, you know, why did you move? Why didn't you just stay where you were? And they say, well, I didn't like the way things are being done. I didn't like the high taxes. But yet when they move to the red states, they bring their bad voting habits with them. Yes. For some reason, there's a disconnect that they just don't get. And it is up to you people in the red states to educate the, shall we say, the blue immigrants and explain to them that because of the way they voted where they were, that's why it turned into the garbage can that you had to flee from. And that moving is fine, but because you moved, you don't keep voting with your bad voting habits. You have to learn, you came here for a reason. You came here because of these particular conditions that you liked, that appealed to you. If you don't like that, then go back to where you fled from. And these are the, you know, something has to be thought about. Just an idea. Just putting it out there. What else have we got to do? Oh, what have I got here? Let me take a quick break right here.
Shelby Gallagher here, letting you know the second book in my book series, A Great State, is set for release on October 28th. Book 2, The Aftermath, is a continuation of the story from The Divide, where our main character, Julie, a single mother, preps for a collapse. Her story is one of overcoming, strength, and prepping as her community crumbles around her. Sound like recent headlines? Book 2 continues the story with tragic details of what life will be like for those who don't prepare. Pre-order your copy now at my website, agreatstate.com.
All right, that's Shelby Gallagher. And if you like Shelby's book and you have read it, check out Shelby and Glenn Tate on the Contra Radio Network's newest show, Prepping 2.0. And don't forget, yeah, you're listening here to the Jeffers Brief, not only on Contra Radio Network on Podbean, but also on KYAH and KNAK. Thank you for listening on the radio, guys. Appreciate it. We're doing a six-month trial on those two terrestrial radio stations to see if it's worth it, if it goes forth. So if you like what you're hearing, tell your friends so they can tune in Utah as well. Thank you. That's good stuff. Also, you know, I'm thinking about it. We really need a major sponsor for the Contra Radio Network. If you like the shows, you own a business, and you want to become a banner sponsor, and you know what? Get a hold of me at ContraRadio@live.com, ContraRadio@live.com. I will hook you up with our chief admin girl, a fine woman. Her name is Dawn. We'll hook you up, and you guys can make the deal. Make the deal. We really do need it here. What else have we got going on? As you're well aware of, if you don't know, I can't stand Antifa. I cannot. I just can't. And I, you know, if you happen to be a subscriber to the Contra Radio Network Facebook page, you know I like posting videos of Antifa getting their butts handed to them. I just love it. Makes me laugh at these fools. But I found something and I wanted to get it out there. This is written, it's an open letter to the hate mongers of Antifa. When did this come out? Jeez, I don't remember. September 19th of last year. And I wanted to put it out there for you. To the hate mongers of Antifa, you've had quite a run spreading violence across our nation in the past few months. And while you claim your name means you're anti-fascist, You've shown by your actions that you're really anti-American and anti-freedom. You've assaulted hundreds of President Trump supporters at rallies. You vandalized property in the nation's capital after the Trump inauguration. And you've gone on an arson rampage because you're upset that former Breitbart News senior editor Milo Yiannopoulos was supposed to speak at the University of California, Berkeley, which, by the way, just happens to be the birthplace of the free speech movement. Now, in Charlottesville, you arrived on the scene with clubs and shields, prepared to commit violence. Instead, your sick plans were superseded by the monstrous behavior of a neo-Nazi Ku Klux Klan members and other right-wing extremists as lunatic as you are. But they don't have much of a liberal media working as agitprop wings for them every day like you do. If there's anything you Antifa members hate, it's free speech, the Bill of Rights, and the United States of America. In this, you have a lot in common with the fascists you denounce, as well as communist tyrants. Now, last Sunday, near your operational headquarters in Berkeley, you proved again that you are a nest of Marxist vipers. You went on yet another violent rampage, attacking innocent conservative men and women who are holding a peaceful rally. That's your modus operandi. Intimidation of anyone you deem your enemy through organized violence. You believe that you are always right, those you disagree with are always wrong, and as a result, you are justified in physically attacking them to shut them up. You so-called anti-fascists are really nothing more than communists yourselves, aren't you? I'm sure it's no coincidence that your banner resembles the German Communist Party flag from the 1920s. No doubt you believe that you're on a roll, and that through further assaults and intimidation, you'll be able to change the political climate and remake of our nation into a Soviet American Union. Nothing could be further from the truth. Here's what's going to happen. Your group is going to be destroyed, either by law enforcement or by average Americans or by both. At the end of the day, you'll be piled on the ash heap of history with a myriad of other thugs, authoritarian movements, and tyrants from the past. You've had a field day picking on college millennials and unarmed reporters. You've called cock Trump supporters with rocks and attacked conservative women with pepper spray. And all the while, local police were forced to look on helplessly under orders from liberal mayors who support the resistance. Newsflash for you. You haven't actually met the real resistance yet, but with your determination, I'll say it again, with your determination for violence and bloodshed, you probably will. The real resistance consists of millions of veterans, patriots, and hardworking Americans who are sick and tired of Antifa violence and suppression of free speech. Many of these patriots would rather die than let the Bill of Rights be trampled on and incinerated by domestic terrorists like you. Of course, you could just stop being violent. Stop suppressing free speech and go home. Then we could all live peacefully as free men and women in the greatest country on earth. But history has taught us that people like you are not going to stop. Therefore, you'd be wise to heed the words of the Bible and Matthew. Those who live by the sword die by the sword. You might want to put down your copy of The Rules for Radicals, take off your goggles and mask, and think about that. More and more Americans are on to you. Despite your name, we know you're outlaws who embrace violence and hatred of America in the same way as the communists, the Nazis, Al-Qaeda, and ISIS. That, my friends, was an open letter that was published. What do you think? That was published September 19th of last year. Now, you know, a bit ago I was talking about the French protest. Here's something that I found. And I talked about earlier, and I want to touch on it again. This is from France 24, their news service called France 24. is from September 7th. The headline story is French Security Services on the Verge of Implosion. Now, don't forget, the French have a Senate. So don't, when we talk about the Senate, we're not talking about the United States Senate, we're talking about the French Senate. A Senate report released last week found that France's security services to be at the crisis point and called on the presidency to act quickly. "We are on the verge of implosion," warned one of the authors. Two French senators are sounding the alarm, warning of a crisis, a general malaise, and a loss of meaning, in a report submitted to the Senate on July 3rd. The survey painted a particularly bleak portrait of the state of law enforcement and called on the government to take urgent action. Commissioned shortly after a wave of suicides among the security forces in the autumn of 2017, the report describes a host of ills that are well known to all those who serve in the police and the gendarmerie, where escalating violence and chronic underfunding are the order of the day. "Many police officers are at the breaking point," Senator François Grosdidier of Les Républicains Party told France 24. In response to the crisis, Grosdidier and Senator Michel Bouton of the Socialist Party have submitted 32 proposals for consideration before the government adopts a budget that could cap security spending for the next several years. France 24 asked the question, puts forth the question, "You spent several weeks investigating the state of law enforcement in France. The report is very alarming." Senator François Grosdidier says, "We are on the verge of implosion. The police have never been in such a dire state. First of all, there's a terrible lack of investment in equipment. Police buildings are old and often substandard. The average age of the gendarmerie's vehicle is 8 years and almost 7 for the police, whereas this should be a maximum age for law enforcement vehicles. Our security forces also lack basic supplies and technology. As for human resources, while there is no chronic understaffing issues like can be seen in neighboring countries, 2/3 of the police or working hours are devoted to judicial proceedings." They're not even out doing anything. They're stuck in court, is what they're trying to say. What else did they say? Trying to make sure we hit the highlights here. "In addition to the problem of underinvestment, there's also today's terrorist threat. Members of the police have been and still are being targeted. The Maganville stabbing sparked a real fear by targeting members of the police in their private capacity. The June 2016 murder of a couple of Maganville, Jean-Baptiste Sylvain and Jessica Schneider, who were both police officers, was claimed by the Islamic State group. Police today are looking for recognition and meaning. When they take significant risks and then find that the response is nil or inadequate in their eyes, it discourages them. And many other government agencies, officials would have just walked away. A large majority of them still have a strong will to serve the citizens because it is a calling, but some have finally let go by either resigning or ending their lives. As for the number of suicides, we note these rates remain high even though risk prevention measures have been put in place and new orders have been given to administration officials in recent years. These numbers would probably have been even more catastrophic without these initiatives." So, in the report, "We recommend the drafting of a white paper on homeland security, as is done for the Army, that would allow us to rethink and evolve certain approaches to security as well as increase the budget. We must increase investment from 2 to 3 billion euros over 5 years. And we must stop investing in the police and gendarmerie based on the whims of each successive presidential administration. The ball is on the government's court. We can no longer say we have not been warned." Now, I don't know what's happened since then, but I had hoped they would have done something by now. Because let's take this a step, shall we? Let's play the game here. Let us suppose that French security services actually do collapse. What happens to France? And how does that affect the rest of Western Europe? something to think about. It could play out many ways. None of it very good, in my opinion. So, I wanted to put that out there just as a reminder. Meanwhile, let's take a look at what's on the news. This is what I like to... you guys heard about PETA? Animal hate speech campaign, where they don't want anybody to say, bring home the bacon. They want you to say, bring home the bagels. Yeah. This is why I find it almost... It would be impossible to find any type of common ground. How do you deal with people like that? How do you talk to people like that? How do you reason with them? I don't think you can. Oh, what else we got here? What else do you think? Oh. And they've got Schwarzenegger, who says, I wish you could travel in time to terminate fossil fuels. Perhaps you might want to travel back in time and not have sex with the maid. Just putting it out there. Maybe that would have been a little bit easier. Ugh. Latest federal survey, wages, bonuses, and benefits are rising faster than prices. Well, that's good. What else we got? Hey, who would pay? Got a question for you. Who would pay money to see what's her goofiness? Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Maxine Waters, and Sheila Lee Jackson on Jeopardy. Oh God, I'd pay money to see that. That would be so cool. That would be fun to watch. They could do like a week. They got a week's worth of shows right there easily. And the ratings would be off the charts. It'd be great. Just thinking about it, that's all. It makes me laugh. What can I say? It does. It makes me giggle. Oh, let's see. What else we got? Secretary of Defense Mattis approves extending the border deployment through next year. We like that. We like that a lot. And and Rush Limbaugh is absolutely correct. I don't know if you heard him. He says the media respect for George H.W. Bush is phony. They never treated that man like this when he was alive. And their objective, no matter how they phrase it, no matter how they package it, no matter how they present it, is to get rid of President Trump. I think Rush is correct on that. I really do. What else we got here? And of course, Macron did cancel the fuel tax hike, but I don't know if that's enough. I don't know. We'll see how it works out in France now. They're burning and everything else all over the place. Burning France to the ground. They were so ticked off about the fuel tax rate. But then again, I have to ask, you guys had an election. You chose this guy. You knew what he was about. Do you really have a right to complain or to protest? I don't know. I'm just thinking about it. Here's one. Here's a good one. I think this is something interesting for us. I don't know if you're aware of it, but in the Europe, especially the UK, they've gone after Facebook, and because Zuckerberg, well, here, I'll tell you, internal Facebook documents published by the UK, that's the United Kingdom, MPs, that's members of Parliament, have revealed that Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg discussed selling user data to developers and advertisers with the staff. And a recent batch of internal Facebook emails published by the UK MPs has revealed that, has been discussed, right, including information of users to developers and advertisers on Facebook's platforms. Emails dating back to October of 2012, shortly after Facebook's IPO, show Zuckerberg brainstorming ways to generate revenue, including selling user data access directly to the developers. And Zuckerberg wrote in his email, I've been thinking about platform business model a lot this weekend. If we make it so developers can generate revenue for us in different ways, then it makes us more acceptable for us to charge them quite a bit more for using the platform. The basic idea is that any other revenue you generate for us earns you a credit towards whatever fees you owe us for using Facebook. For most developers, this would probably cover costs completely. So instead of everybody paying us directly, they just use our payments or ads products. A basic model could be login with Facebook is always free. Pushing content to Facebook is always free. Reading anything, including friends, costs a lot of money, perhaps on the order of 10 cents per user each year. For the money that you owe, you can cover it in any of the following ways. Buy ads from us in Necco or another system. Run our ads in your app or website. Canvas apps already do this. Use our payments. Sell your items in our Karma store. Or if the revenue we get from those doesn't add up to more than the fees you owe us, then you just pay us the fee directly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And another email dated October 27th, 2012, Zuckerberg discussed linking user data to company revenue with Facebook's former vice president of product, Sam Lesson. In the email, it appears that Lesson discussed the possibility of a data link with Zuckerberg, who did not seem to believe that a user data link was a real threat. Zuckerberg wrote, "There's a big question on where we get the revenue from. Do we make it easy for devs to use our payments or ad network but not require them? Do we require them? Do we just charge a revenue share directly and let developers who use them get a credit against what they owe us? It's not at all clear to me here that we have a model that will actually make us revenue we want at scale. I'm getting more on board with locking down some of the parts of platform, including friends' data and potential email addresses for mobile apps. I'm generally skeptical. There's as much a data leak strategic risk as you think. I agree there is a clear risk on the advertiser side, but I haven't figured out how that connects to the rest of the platform. I think we leak info to developers, but I just can't think of any instances where that data has leaked from developer to developer and caused a real issue for us. Do you have an example of this?" What do you think? Pretty interesting so far, huh? Well, let me continue, really. "Without limiting distribution or access to friends who use this app, I don't think we have any way to get developers to pay us at all besides offering payments and ad networks." Oh, yes. And there is like 250 pages of internal Facebook documents that that they've released to the public. But wait, there's more. You like Facebook so much? Here you go. Now, there's a report about internal tensions at Facebook. According to BuzzFeed News, after more than a year of bad press, internal tensions are reaching a boiling point and are now spilling out into public view. Internally, the conflict seems to have divided Facebook into three camps: those loyal to Zuckerberg and Chief Operating Officer Sheryl Sandberg, those who see the current scandals as proof of a larger corporate meltdown, and a group who see the entire narrative, including the portrayal of the company's hiring of communications consulting firm Definers Public Affairs, as examples of biased media attacks. BuzzFeed News explained, current and former employees describe a tense and at times hostile atmosphere inside the company, one in which both senior employees and even stauncher loyalists are contemplating their futures. One former Facebook employee told BuzzFeed News, "It's otherwise rational, sane people who are in Mark's orbit spouting full-blown anti-media rhetoric, saying that the press is ganging up on Facebook. It's the bunker mentality. These people have been under siege for 600 days now. They're getting tired, getting cranky, and the only survival strategy is to quit or fully buy in." Another former employee claimed workers now have burner phones to talk crap about the company, not even to reporters, just to other employees. While many are reportedly hoping for Zuckerberg to be replaced in similar fashion to how former Uber CEO Travis Kalanick was replaced by Dara I can't say his name, Khosrowshahi in 2017, followed bad publicity surrounding the company and Kalanick. Could there be trouble in Facebook paradise? I think so. Wanted to put that out there. Now, meanwhile, we all know that Mueller and his witch hunt have a sentencing document that shows collusion between the media, the deep state, and the Obama administration. Now, this is for you patriots out there. You'll probably want to get this. Special Counselor Mueller filed a sentencing memorandum Tuesday with the federal court in Washington, D.C. that recommends General Michael Flynn receive no jail time after pleading guilty to the crime of lying to the FBI, citing substantial assistance to the government in its investigations. The mainstream media interpreted that remark as evidence that Flynn gave Mueller key information against President Donald Trump and Russia, quote-unquote, collusion. Just think of something. More likely, however, Mueller's request reflects the fact that Flynn did not actually commit the crime to which he pleaded guilty, no less than then FBI Director James Comey told Congress last March that Flynn had not in fact lied to the FBI. If Flynn had demanded a trial on the merits, he could have subpoenaed Comey in his defense. The special counsel likely pressured Flynn to cooperate using other accusations against him or perhaps his family. Hold it there. One thing it seems to be coming out more and more is Mueller was going after Flynn's son. We don't know about what, but the deal was cut. If you plead guilty, we'll lay off your son. We're starting to see that same strategy play out. I believe last week it was leaked that Mueller is targeting Ivanka Trump. So, draw your own conclusions. Now, getting back to it, it's not clear exactly what information Flynn provided Mueller. The only other crime referenced in the sentencing document is Flynn's failure to register as a foreign agent for Turkey. Again, though that is rather flimsy, it is rare that anyone in Washington is prosecuted under the Foreign Agents Registration Act, and rarer still that anyone is pursued under the Logan Act, which was the reason Flynn was under surveillance in the first place. Does anybody find it interesting that they're going after Flynn on the Logan Act? But meanwhile, meanwhile, we got the former Secretary of State, Lurch, advising Iran how to get around U.S. sanctions. I guess that's okay. Just put it out there. In fact, the most explosive piece of information in the sentencing document is not about collusion with the Russians, but about collusion between the media, the intelligence services, and the outgoing members of the Obama administration. The document begins its recitation of Flynn's offenses by citing information that had appeared in the Washington Post from a leaked classified surveillance transcript in which Flynn's name had been unmasked, and we know who did that. Days prior to the FBI's interview of the defendant, the Washington Post had published a story alleging that he had spoken with Russia's ambassador to the United States on December 29, 2016, the day the United States announced sanctions and other measures against Russia in response to that government's actions intended to interfere with the 2016 election. Collectively, sanctions. If you want to see the article, it's by David Ignatius. The title is "Why Did Obama Dawdle on Russia's Hacking?" Washington Post, January 12, 2017. You'll find that story there. That information, the document suggests, led the FBI to interview Flynn on January 24, 2017. The conversation, in which he did not, according to Comey, lie to them, but which landed him in trouble. The government had their surveillance transcripts, and it knew what Flynn had told the Russian ambassador. But the Post intervention was crucial in setting the trap in which to ensnare Flynn and turn him into a government witness. Mueller's sentencing document does not mention the fact that the information published in the Post was illegally leaked to the press by the intelligence services. And the reason that happened was that the outgoing Obama administration changed the rules on the sharing of classified surveillance among government agencies, weakening privacy protections, probably intending that such information be more difficult to keep secret and easier to leak. Moreover, someone in the Obama administration, we do not yet know, who, though it had to be someone senior, unmasked Flynn's name to make sure he was exposed. So while we do not yet know Mueller's next moves, what the Flynn sentencing document reinforces is that the Russia collusion investigation was tainted from the start by a crime committed against Flynn himself, with the collusion of the media, the deep state, and Obama's loyalist. What do you think about that, Jack? And yet, all this stuff keeps coming out time and time again. And yet, nobody's indicted. No one's in prison. Nobody's being charged. If you do not believe that we have a two-tier justice system in this country, I suggest you live under a rock. Or even under a bridge. Something to think about. Now, here's something new and interesting. House Dems plan to push to criminalize, mind you, private gun sales. You heard me right. House Democrats plan to push to criminalize private gun sales. Mother Jones reports that Representative Mike Thompson, Democrat, California, big surprise there, met with gun control groups that included the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, Every Town for Gun Safety, the Center for American Progress, the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence, and Gabby Gifford's group. He asked them what they wanted, and a bill to criminalize private gun sales was on their wish list. So Thompson will sponsor legislation requiring a background check before someone may buy a gun from his neighbor. A co-worker to get a background check before buying a gun from a co-worker, and so forth. The bill will go so far as to require a son to get a background check before a father can give him a gun as a gift. Private gun sales are legal and have been an American tradition since 1791, the year the Second Amendment was what? Was ratified. Ironically, a ban on private sales would not have stopped a single mass shooting witnessed to this point in the 21st century, because nearly every mass shooter acquires his guns at retail via a background check. The exceptions to the rule are the mass shooters who steal their guns. While the Democrats' gun control push will not prevent mass shootings, it will criminalize a grandfather for passing his goose gun to his grandson without government permission. It will also criminalize a mother who gives her college-age daughter a revolver for self-defense without first getting government permission. Hey, you Democrat gun owners out there, and you're out there, you voted for this crap. You live with it. The rest of us, not so much. Yeah. If you watch CRTV and you've missed Michelle Malkin, she left after the merge with the Blaze, and I don't blame her. Oh, are you kidding me? By the way, I still have yet to hear an answer. You know, they got Sean Penn filming a Jamal Khashoggi documentary in Turkey. Please, I would like the Turkish authorities to take Sean Penn into custody and let him live in a Turkish prison for a while, give him a new, unique perspective on the world. But I asked a month or so ago about Jamal Khashoggi. Why is the United States even involved in it? The man was not a U.S. citizen. The alleged crime did not happen on U.S. soil. It had nothing to do with the United States. So he was a columnist for the Washington Post. Who cares? That doesn't mean the United States has to get... Does the United States going to get involved in murders of everybody in the world now? There's no reason for the United States to be involved in that, in the Jamal Khashoggi murder investigation whatsoever. And I can't find anybody can give me a reason why. Just can't. What else we got? I kind of a bunch of different stuff here. I do. I really do. I find some interesting things. In other news, hey, this is something that you need to know. There's been a recall. The FDA has recalled 8 brands of dog food may contain toxic levels of vitamin D. The U.S. says the FDA alert warned consumers not to use the products after tests revealed samples of the dog food brands had extremely high levels of vitamin D, enough to cause harm in animals that consume the products. The agency stressed that the pet products recalled, only food products intended for dogs, were affected. If you're eating dog food, you should not be. It's not good for you. FDA officials say consumers should avoid using the following brands: Nutriska, Natural Life Pet Products, Sunshine Mills Incorporated, ANF Incorporated, Lidl, the Orlando brand, Kroger, ELM Pet Products Incorporated, and let's see what else there. The Mayo Clinic says vitamin D toxicity can cause symptoms such as vomiting, weakness, and increased urination. Extremely high levels of vitamin D can cause more serious conditions like kidney failure and can be fatal if not treated right away. The FDA issued another warning around this time last year about dog treats, warning pet owners to refrain from buying store-bought bone treats that could break apart and injure the pets. That is important, mainly because I like dogs. Actually, the fact is, I like animals more than I like most people. That's just the truth of the matter. I mean, that's just the way it is. And now let's check out this. What's the Social Justice Warriors up to so far? Well, let's find out. Saturday Night Live comedian Nimesh Patel kicked off the Columbia University stage by offended students on Friday night, halfway through his performance, because students found his jokes offensive. There's a study that says the more vulgar term for crap is America's most used word on Twitter. It says that American Twitter users are overwhelmingly negative on the platform and utilize swear words more often than those from other countries. Researchers claim the Twitter data matches the established stereotypes about Americans. The Evergreen State faculty voted to ban the word covenant due to cultural genocide. What else we got here? LGBTQ writer gets death threats after accusing Ariana Grande of wearing blackface in a music video. The LGBTQ publication Into published a column accusing the pop star of wearing blackface, among other offenses, leading to death threats being made against the writer. And the UC Berkeley settles lawsuit over conservative speaker censorship. They reached a settlement with conservative groups that were alleging the school discriminates against conservative speakers. And what else? There's a police report of a Florida Atlantic University student threatened to kill a professor over a 7 a.m. exam. You know what? I think it's a little overreaching. There's a report out that Google personalizes search results even when users are logged out. There's a new study claims that Google personalizes search results even when a Google user is logged out of their account. Tests for the phrases gun control, immigration, and vaccinations all provided different results for different test users, which could reportedly not be explained by changes in location or other expected factors. All right, that's about it for right now. I want to thank you for taking the time to check in here with myself here at the Jeffers Brief on Contrario Network. We are on KYAH and KNAK, as well as on podbean.com if you like to download the episodes. And please listen to us if you're in the state of Utah on the aforementioned radio stations. I'm John Jeffers saying good day and have a good week. I'll talk to you later.